Out of the night comes the whispering voice of the night wind to tell another story of man's battle with fate. The true story tonight of the extreme lengths to which a gang of crooks went to defraud insurance companies, and of how their plot went astray.
We knock him off, see? But we make it look like an accident. Get the racket? That way we collect double indemnity.
We are in Tony Marino's on 3rd Avenue, New York. It's quite a big place, a speakeasy and clip joint. Tony has lots of customers and business is brisk. But we have to concern ourselves with those three tough-looking babies in the corner pew talking to the fellow in the white apron. They are Dan Kreisberg, Harry Green, and Frank Pasker. Green is a taxi driver, Pasker a mortician, which is a fancy way of saying undertaker, and Kreisberg just doesn't work at all, except when he's in Sing Sing, which is fairly regularly. The fellow in the apron is no less a personage than Tony Marino, the big shot himself. And from the looks on their faces, it isn't tomorrow's ball game they're talking about.
Now, here's the setup. We select some guy, and each of us takes out an insurance policy on his life. And then, we knock him off. Simple, ain't it?
Yeah, not so simple. Those insurance guys weren't born yesterday. When a guy's murdered, they ask a lot of questions before they pay out. We can't afford to take chances like that.
But don't you see, it won't be murder. It'll be accidental death.
So we pick a victim, insure him, and then wait for him to fall down and break his neck, huh? And maybe he won't be so obliging. Maybe he'll just go on living.
Not if we handle him right.
We knock him off, see? But we make it look like an accident. Get the racket? That way we collect double indemnity.
Huh? Double what?
Double indemnity. Ain't you never heard of that? If a guy gets insured and then he dies through an accident, they pay off twice the amount of his policy. It's a racket these insurance companies work to get business.
Well, it sounds okay by me. All we gotta do now is find someone to insure.
Yeah. Any ideas, Dan?
No, Hank. I thought you guys might know someone.
How about you, Tony?
Yeah, you ought to know someone, Tony. All the dopes in the world come to this joint. Pick on some fella that won't cause much trouble. Someone we can knock off nice and quiet with no awkward questions asked.
Well, I don't know. Joe Murphy is my bartender. He sees more of what's going on than I do. I'll call him over and see what he's got to say. Hey, Joe! Joe!
Huh? You want me, boss?
Yeah. Who's the biggest dope ever comes into this joint?
That's easy. Mike Malloy.
Why, sure. Why didn't I think of him before? There's the guy for you, Malloy.
Who is he? What's he do for a living?
Yeah, he don't do nothing except drink when he can get the dope.
That sounds promising.
I tell you, he's a natural. Even if we don't do nothing to him at all, he will have drunk himself to death in 12 months.
Okay, fellas. Mike Malloy it is.
At that, I suppose you'd call it a legitimate business deal, though it does seem just a bit tough on Mike Malloy. Next day, Kreisberg takes out an $800 policy on Malloy's life, and Green and Pasker chip in for $500 worth each. That makes Malloy worth $1,800, and double that sum in case of death by accident, which is a lot more than ever he's been worth before. The same evening, in a private room behind Tony's bar, the boys get together again. It's just like one of those bank board meetings. You know, strictly business.
I had a good look at Malloy today. If ever a guy was standing with one foot in the grave, that's him.
Well, maybe we won't have to knock him off after all.
That's what I thought. I figured that if we could keep filling him up with liquor, he's bound to get so blind one of these nights he'll walk outside and step right under a taxi or something like that.
Sure, that's it. Then we're right out in the clear.
Anyway, I told Joe to keep the liquor up to him, even when he's got no dough.
Maybe it might help things along if Joe just popped a shot of wood alcohol or metho into his drink now and then, huh?
Yeah, I figured that out, too. Don't worry, fellas. From now on, every night when Mike Malloy leaves this joint, he's going to be so stewed anyone would think he was a Hungarian goulash.
So it is that Mike Malloy suddenly finds all his Christmases are coming at once. It's okay by him.
Will I fill her up again, Mike?
Well, I'd like another, Joe, but I guess I must have left my wallet at home.
Yeah, that's all right, pal. This is on the house.
Oh, thanks.
How about a double header?
Sure.
Triple header, if you like.
Yes, see what goes on here.
And boss's orders, Mike. Joe, he says to me, Mike Malloy is one of our best customers, he says. Nothing's too good for him. Nothing at all.
Well, that's mighty nice of Tony. Mighty nice indeed.
Night after night, the boys in the back room watch Malloy stagger out. They keep their fingers crossed, and each morning they scan the papers for news of Malloy's death. But it doesn't seem to be working out somehow. Each afternoon, the door of Tony's joint swings open, and in walks Malloy chirping like a cricket, and with the one inevitable sentence on his lips,
"Boy, ain't I got a thirst."
Well, after a few weeks of this, the boys are getting a little tired. Their eyes are sore from reading too many newspapers. And they realize the time has come when something's got to be done. Frank Pasker, the undertaker, gets the right idea.
Now, here's how I figure it out. Joe will fill Malloy up tonight till he passes right out. Then Harry and me will take him in Harry's taxi to some quiet joint, and we'll strip him off, pour a few buckets of water over him, and leave him. The way the weather is now, if he don't get double pneumonia out of that lot, I'll be a monkey's uncle.
The plan works out all right. A bit too well, maybe, because Frank Pasker gets a chill in the throat and finishes up with a bad attack of tonsillitis and can hardly talk. But Frank figures it's worth it. Until next day, when the door swings open, and Malloy strides in.
Hello there, Domi, lad. Give me a drop of the old regular. I had a bad time last night. Some guy swiped me out of coverings and left me lying in the rain. Guess I must have got a slight chill. just a head cold, you know, but I'd better look after it all the same.
So the boys are right back where they started. It's discouraging, to say the least. Dan Kreisberg gets the next bright idea.
What we gotta do is give him tamarind poison.
Oh, nixon the poison. It's too easy traced.
Ah, don't be a dope. What I mean is the kind of poison you get in spoiled food. What say we open a can of sardines or something like that? Leave it lying around for a long while till it gets good and full of tamarind. Then Joe makes a sandwich of it and gives it to Malloy.
Supposing it's so high, Malloy won't eat it.
Listen, this guy's so pickled, he don't have a sense of smell no more. He'll eat anything.
So once more, the trap is laid. The sardines are opened and are allowed to putrefy in the unwholesome air of Tony's kitchen. And boy, are they high. Then they're made up into a sandwich and handed over to Malloy. His nostrils don't even twitch as he conveys the morsel to his mouth.
How is it, Mike?
Real appetizing, me boy. I don't suppose you'd have some more of the same round the place, would you?
No. Not just now.
Ah, well, I'll be having a pint of the best to wash it down.
By now, the boys in the back room are getting desperate, and they figure something a little less subtle is indicated. That night, as Malloy staggers out of the speakeasy in his usual pickled state...
Okay, here he is now. Let him have it, Harry.
Right.
If that don't fix him, nothing will.
Oh, but it takes more than being run down by a taxi to dispose of Mike Malloy. At the hospital, he is found to be suffering from concussion and a broken shoulder. And not altogether surprisingly, alcoholism. For a week, the boys scan the papers hopefully for news of his death. Ah, but such is not to be. And at the end of that time, Malloy, as cheerful as ever, is back at his customary stamping ground.
Hey, Joe, I ain't had a drink for a week. Don't an old customer rate attention around this joint?
It's getting the boys down now. The insurance money doesn't matter anymore. It's become a question of professional pride. Oh, they can't think of what to do next. Until out of the blue, Mr. Pasker finally settles the whole thing once and for all.
Well, I done it.
You done what?
Knocked my lie off.
No kidding. What did you do?
I put him to bed in a room in a joint on Fulton Avenue. Then I got a rubber tube, fixed one end into a gas tap, put the other end in his mouth, and turned the gas on.
Is he dead?
Not only dead, but I got a certificate to say it was pneumonia that sent him off.
Oh, nice going. How did you fix that?
A doctor I know named Manzella. It cost $100, but I figure it was worth it.
Well, that's that. All we gotta do is collect the dough.
So the boys lodge their claims. But somehow the insurance companies don't seem so anxious to pay out. They get to comparing notes, and what they discover doesn't smell so good. In fact, it's so odoriferous that a few nights later, the door to Tony's private room opens, and in walks a guy from the DA's office.
Okay, you guys. Reach high. No tricks.
You see, the companies have mentioned the matter of double indemnity to the police, and the police have had a little talk to Dr. Frank Manzella. So, when the payoff comes, it's not quite the sort the boys had figured.
Joseph Murphy, Daniel Kreisberg, Antonio Marino, and Frank Pasca, a jury of your fellow citizens has found you guilty of willful murder of Michael Malloy. It is now my solemn duty to sentence you to death.
And in such a way, a small firm of Murder Incorporated was liquidated. Unbelievable, but true. Out of the night comes the whispering voice of the night wind with stories that are...
mysterious.
Exciting.
Intriguing.
Strange. But true.